Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome in Rose City to Soccer Made in Portland. Ryan Clark here with Chris Reifer. It's been a while since you've heard from us, but there has been a lot that has gone on the field for both teams here in the Rose City. We will begin with the Portland Thorns, who since our last recording have won four consecutive matches under interim coach Rob Gale, have really turned the jets on and figured a lot of the things out that they were struggling with in that winless stretch to start the season, but still, as Chris Reifer has pointed out, work to be done for a team that has been decidedly imperfect in some of these victories, but nonetheless, 3 points each time out, four games in a row going into this next game against Seattle. Chris, just looking at those four games and what you've seen from the Thorns over the last couple of weeks, a jam-packed week, obviously, for them with three games in this last seven-day stretch. What stands out to you over that stretch?
What stands out to me is I don't think this team has really actually hit its stride yet. And yet they're getting the results that they've gotten over the course of the last couple of weeks. I think this is we're seeing sort of forward progress, of course. But look, the story of the last few weeks is, if you are just kind of competent around Sophia Smith, that's a pretty good formula for winning games, right? And finally, over the weekend, they did it without sort of Smith leading the goal scoring game breaking charge. But if you want to sort of put an overarching narrative on all of it, it's that look, I mean, if you sort of just stabilize things in the rest of the team, Sophia Smith's going to win you a good number of games. And I think that's where they are. I think they have stabilized things. I think they're doing a better job of sort of writing and managing game states than they were. I think we very much saw that over the weekend against the Spirit at home, where they went up a couple, and then the game didn't turn into a track meet. Right, the Spirit certainly had more of the ball than the Thorns did. I think the Thorns would have liked to have created one or two more good chances, maybe get that third goal on the counter. But they managed the game state a lot better than they had, and that they sort of have in these other games, in which we've seen them take leads before, but not be able to sort of keep control of the game. This was under much better control. And so, all of that stuff feels like it's stabilizing and is getting locked in a little bit more, but it remains very much a work in progress. I don't think the performance against the Spirit was perfect. I don't think the performance against Bay FC was perfect. And I think you can sort of find things to work on over the course of these last four games. But that, in many respects, I think should be the exciting thing for Thorns fans, that they are getting the results, that they have sort of climbed out from the cellar where they were on, 1 point through their first four games, if my memory is serving me right. Now they're fourth in the league. Cool. Okay. they've gotten the results. And I think the team can sort of benefit from the vibes while also feeling like, okay, let's go find our ceiling now and see if we can get to the point where we're a true contender. I don't think they are just yet, but I think there's a much clearer path to getting there today than there was last time we recorded.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it has taken a lot of the pressure off of them because of that rough start, right? You know, when you're a team that is as talented as this Thorns team is, obviously getting off to a start that they did is going to create this sort of external pressure. Like you feel like you should be doing better, like you feel like you can be doing better. And quite honestly, that carried over into last season as well. You felt it at the end of the season in that Angel City game. You felt it when they were eliminated by Gotham. You know, it didn't feel right for them. And now this has sort of been their get back period. And yes, as we've pointed out, it's been imperfect, but in doing so, they've been able to get 3 points out of every game, right? Like, and that's a very rare occurrence for a team trying to sort of reform itself and reestablish its identity for them to rattle off 4 wins in a row. I'm pretty sure that's among the best stretches in Thorns history in terms of,
you can't do a whole lot better.
Yeah, no, you can't do too much better than that. I think that 5 victories in a row might be the record for the team. And that was probably in the very first year of the Thorns existence. Obviously they end up winning the championship that year, but you know, looking at back at those games, looking at sort of the different tweaks and adjustments, lineup wise, I think
I have a favorite.
Yeah, Hina Sugita in the midfield. That's
in central midfield and in a really free role to go find space. I like, and at times deeper lying, I really like the moments that the Thorns use Sugita to build. I mean, this is a player that was pretty out of favor under Mike Norris. And I think has become a really important part of that sort of engine room. But in general, I really like the way the central midfield has worked with Hina Sugita in it and Sam Coffey and usually Jesse Fleming, although they've had to do some rotation over the course of the last week just because of the congested schedule. But that, I think, is something that has worked really well. I think Hina having the freedom to go find those spots has made them a little bit more sort of incisive in their build out. There's a lot of work still to do in the build out phases. And I think we really saw that against the Spirit, who after going down 2-0, just pressed like crazy and had some success in doing it. And the Thorns struggled to build through it or to build or over it and to bypass it. But so there's work still to do there, but I like that look quite a bit. And so of the things that Gale has done, that is by far my favorite.
Yeah, and I think that on the broadcast, they mentioned specifically that Gale envisions Sam Coffey and Hina Sugita as dual eights, which is an interesting usage of Hina. And they put Fleming up in more of like a traditional like number 10 role, which is not necessarily what we expected coming into this season, right? Obviously, you know, under Mike Norris, Hina Sugita was more of a winger in a lot of the cases, if she was even on the field. Frankly, Norris didn't really rate her all that much. And it was, I think, to the team's detriment at the start of this season for sure. But now, you know, Hina's moved back, which is interesting for somebody that, you know, isn't necessarily thought of as like a two-way, like hyper-physical sort of midfielder. But you watch what she did in that Spirit game, and she was stuck in and extremely physical and winning balls and using her sort of acrobatic skills with her feet in ways that I think were really impressive. And one of the examples was like, she was like essentially rolling around on the ground, and she did something that I've seen her do before where she's still able to sort of like, you know, kick her feet around and win a ball in traffic. So I think it really fits her skill set well. And I think that, you know, in the last year plus, she has adjusted to the physicality of NWSL in a way that she might not have early on in her Thorns career. So,
and she can use, I mean, her work rate is fantastic. Her mobility is very good. And then you also see her technical ability on the ball and being able to get out of tight spots. Those are all things that they've kind of just been missing in the central midfield over the course of the early part of the season. And I think including late last year. And so I think that's been a really good move. I just think that you know, I'm not going to say that has been the difference. I think the way they've approached some of these games, especially against the Spirit, I think the way they approached that game made a lot of sense. And we saw some of the perils of allowing a game in which the Thorns are leading to open up against Bay, right? And that, I think, especially sort of exposed some of Becky Sauerbrunn's physical limitations at this stage of her career. But when they took the lead against the Spirit, they were much more compact. They were much more organized. And they really, really seemed to prioritize sort of closing down the game. And Sauerbrunn was phenomenal and showed the value that she can still deliver. So, I think all of those things are really positive developments. I think we're seeing a bit more pragmatic approach to games and even the way games change over the course of the variants and game states that happen over the course of a match. And I think that's exactly what this team needed, because at times it was, frankly, at a lot of times, it was just way too naive over the course of the early part of the season and late last season. And it seems like they've lost some of that naivete and that they're just a bit more pragmatic now.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that the way that they play has changed, not in like transformative, like, wow, this looks like a completely different tactical approach sort of way, but it seems like there's less of the, you know, playing wide and spraying passes into the center of the field and hoping for the best. You know, the situations where Janine Becky is out wide or Morgan Weaver or somebody else, and they just fling something in there and hope it works out. It's more like of the pinging the ball around and using the technical ability of those players in the midfield to your benefit in the buildup. And they aren't, I think, leaving themselves as exposed at the back as they were before. Now, there obviously are moments where, you know, they might be struggling to recover. But I think that the progress has definitely been visible in that regard in terms of defending. I think that Shelby Hogan was great in that Spirit game too. She is somebody that had a really rough start to the season. Now, she wasn't obviously helped by the fact that they had all those issues at the back. That leaves any goalkeeper, as Maxime Crépeau on the Timbers would tell you firsthand, that leaves a goalkeeper pretty exposed a lot of the time. But I think that she has shown significant progress and you know, has earned her right to continue to be between the wickets for them. Soph obviously didn't have a great game against the Spirit, but otherwise she's been nuclear. I mean, it's like seven goals, three assists at this point is just, it's outrageous. Like I saw a graphic that the Current posted where they showed that, like, of the top five goal scorers in NWSL, I think they had three of them. And the other players were sort of in like a faded font where you couldn't really see their name, but like Soph was
doesn't matter what font you put Sophia Smith's name and accomplishments in right now. They are exemplary.
Yeah, they are exemplary. And she was at the top. She had seven goals above the best player on their team. I think had four or five. And
you know, you can put it in Comic Sans and it's going to be deadly serious.
you could put it in papyrus maybe. it's been an amazing season for Soph. She certainly has led the way for them in this sort of turnaround. And she played a lot this week, frankly, and
frankly looked really gassed toward the end of that Spirit game. Just looked like the legs were awfully heavy, and that was the difference. There were a couple of moments where she did get out on the break. Frankly, the kinds of opportunities that the Thorns probably wanted to create in that game state, and just didn't have the legs. Very understandably, after a busy week with a lot of travel and, well, a lot of points too.
Exactly, and so she and the rest of the team will have this full week to sort of rest, recover, and retool ahead of this game against the Rain, which is going to be a really fun one at Providence Park.
One additional shout, I think, from a player's perspective, Christine Sinclair has found the spots to make a difference.
Yes.
That is exactly what you want from Christine Sinclair on this team at this stage of her career. And I think, you know, whether how they're choosing when and where to deploy her is going to be continue to be important decisions. But look, I mean, the goal she scored against the Spirit was like kind of a subtly like clever, classy goal to bring the ball down the way she did. That was really, really nice.
Yeah, bottom of her boot. Yeah, that was pretty sweet.
And those, that is the value that that Sync can very much still bring to this team. And so I think that that too is really exciting, that she's in those spots more often now, instead of being sort of asked to step into a central midfield that unit that wasn't really working, and being asked to carry more of the load. That's not how you should be using Christine Sinclair at this point. I think Rob Gale's got that right as well, and I think that's really helped Sink, you know, maximize her contribution to this team. And clearly, there's still contribution there to be made.
Definitely, she has been really impressive in the last couple of weeks, just in her contribution. And I think that she plays very well with Sophia Smith at this stage in her career, because you think about all the eyeballs and attention that Soph draws when she has the ball, understandably so, because it's just a terrifying thing to see. Sink, being as savvy as she is and knowing the game better than any of the other 21 players on the field, she finds those spots and she finds those little pockets of space as a sort of, you know, center forward in that lineup to be lethal. And that was a perfect example. Her finishing that off was a great finish. Sam Coffey scored a goal in that game too. Shout out to her. I think that the dual eights thing is great for her and Hina in terms of building out from the midfield. But she also said something I think was noteworthy in her post-game interview after that Spirit game. The rain obviously like coming down in buckets on top of her. So I feel for her having to do that interview. But she said something really interesting, that she's trying to be up higher and in positions to score more goals and to make more plays in those sort of positions, which I think is a very good thing, because, you know, her ability as a finisher is something that she has not necessarily shown off the last couple of years. Last year, she, you know, led the NWSL in assists and was an incredible playmaker in the position Mike Norris had her in. But she is somebody that, you know, can finish with the best of them. And I think we saw a good example of that on one touch, just firing one into the net on what was a great cutback and pass by Hina Sugita. So, you know, good performances all around from the Thorns, but a lot to be excited about for sure.
Yep. And I think, you know, one of the things that they're going to have to figure out is how they work out the balance in that double pivot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always the trick with double pivots. Everybody would play in a double pivot if it was easy. And if it was a simple dynamic to work out, she and Sugita are going to have to continue to work to do that. But I agree that at least the theoretical returns, and we've seen some, you know, real returns out of this early on, are look good. And so it's a matter of sort of continuing to chip away to become the team that I think now we see they can be. But it's going to take some more work to do it, because they're not there yet.
Two pieces that I think are worth touching on the Thorns before we move on to the Timbers. One, that injury with Morgan Weaver, which we don't know the extent of yet, could potentially be a serious one, but we don't have any information at this point from the Thorns on that. It looks to be a knee injury for Morgan.
And didn't look good when it happened at Bay.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
It's not a great one. I mean, we will have to wait and see. You never want to speculate about something like that. Hopefully it turns out to be not as much of a thing.
Because she means a lot to this team from really an attacking perspective, and had not quite found her role within the last few games of success for the Thorns, right? She had kind of been one of the odd people out in terms of contribution, but obviously can go off at any time and is one of the more talented forwards in the league. That leads into the other piece I wanted to touch on, which is the rookie Peyton Linehan, who is a very intriguing player and somebody who I think will benefit from the unfortunate situation of Morgan Weaver being injured, right? Because she slotted in there as a forward with Sophia Smith, and we saw flashes against Bay FC, including that goal that she scored on a pass from Smith, and then the pass she made to Smith that led to the other goal for Soph. Really good pairing and two dynamic players. And Linehan, I think, has showcased a lot of pace. She's showcased an ability and a control on the ball that, you know, somebody of that pace does not always have. and could slot in there as a regular member of the starting lineup for this team as a rookie and just be another massive W for Karina LeBlanc and the front office in the draft, right? The idea of bringing in another like serious contributor and potential star. We'll see how she continues to develop throughout this season, but I have been thoroughly impressed with Linehan so far.
Yeah, some really good looks so far from Linehan. I think we need a little bit bigger body of work. It's a little bit easier to do it when you're not, you know, necessarily on the scouting report and you're not somebody that that teams are really looking at in their video sessions ahead of a game. And we see this frequently from rookies that that, you know, they sort of come on and they make an impression and then things get a little bit harder. So that's going to be the question for her, is as things get harder, as she gets more playing time for the Thorns, and I think she's absolutely deserved it because the performances to this point have been good, how she handles that. And so, you know, I think really interesting player. I think she's very much going to be in the discussion to be starting in that wide role, whether it's as a wide forward or as a winger. I think she's very much put herself in that discussion at this point. And now it's a matter of who's going to seize that. Is it going to be Janine Becky? Is Weaver going to be back in and playing? If she is, you've got to think that she's, you know, got one of those spots on lockdown. But Linehan now is in that conversation. And I think that's everything you can ask for and everything you want from a prospect like her. So full credit to her for getting to the place where she is. But I mean, she's in a similar place as the rest of the team, right? She's kind of gotten some of the results. But there's still work to do. And I think that's probably something that she feels personally, like the team feels collectively.
For sure. That rookie wall is a real thing. And it happens even to the best rookies. You think about Sam Coffey's rookie year. She was amazing, but she had those stretches that were challenging for sure. And Peyton will have those. She's forward too. So inevitably there's going to be those spotlight moments that become challenging for you. But yeah, look, she, you know, because of Weaver's injury and because of the fact that the Olympics are coming up, I feel like those sort of opportunities are going to definitely be there for her, and she'll get the sort of requisite minutes that she needs to develop. So
yeah, there's going to be the opportunity for sure.
That'll definitely be there. Speaking of walls and running not through them but into them,
like over and over,
like a
broken Roomba.
Yeah, like a yeah, like a Roomba running into like a closed door. The Portland Timbers lose 2-0 at Charlotte over the weekend. 8 consecutive matches without a victory. They have not won in what will be more than 2 months come Sunday when they face the Seattle Sounders. That's a long freaking time without winning a match. And Phil Neville, he, to his credit, has been vocal in post-game press conferences about the issues at play, no more so than this most recent match, which one could argue was one of, if not their worst performance of the season. Bad body language, really disorganized play. He came out and called the players out in less deflecting blame ways, which people got on other coaches over the years for doing things like that. And more of like a look, like it's time to show up. Like if you're not up to the standard, if you're not, you know, putting in the consistent effort, then there's going to be a change at your position. And I would expect there will be several changes in the lineup, right? We'll see what they are, but nonetheless he was extremely vocal in that regard after the game. But within the game and within the last several games, it has been something of a spiral for the Timbers, now down to 0.9 points per game, no longer in the meme territory of 1.1 in worse territory.
The good old days.
Yeah. The good old days of 1.1 points per game. So they're in a very rough spot, and one where if they do not pull out a victory against the Sounders, they could get past by the Sounders if they take the L at home this weekend. Past, mind you, in the bottom part of the standings, like toward the wooden spoon.
Neither
territory.
Of these teams have covered themselves in glory so far.
No, they have not done terribly well in Cascadia this year. But
Whitecaps are doing great.
Yeah, other than the Whitecaps. It's been a really, I think, telling stretch for the Timbers. We talked on previous podcasts, and this has been the company line, but it's also been one that I think has rang true in some cases, is that the team was better than their record, right? The idea that the talent on the roster is not indicative of the results that have been occurring on the field. At this point, they're starting to show these things that make me think maybe this is who they are. Maybe in fact, this roster does have deeper flaws than we see on the surface.
I disagree.
But the other side of that coin, as I was going to point out before you likely made the same point, is that it feels less like a talent issue to me and more a preparation and discipline issue, which obviously anybody, including Phil Neville himself, would point out that falls on a coaching staff at the end of the day. Now, if you have undisciplined players on your roster, if you have guys that aren't listening, that don't care, that aren't putting in the consistent effort, that's a different story. And I'm not necessarily saying that that's the guys on this roster, but watch the game over the weekend and maybe you can see a few of those guys performing in such a way. It's pretty blatant, honestly, in stretches. So I think it is more that. I think it is more of a preparation and discipline issue, and that's really coming to a head right now.
Yeah, Zach McGraw didn't forget how to play soccer over the holidays, right? Neither did Christian Paredes. I mean, those two guys haven't been great early this season. In fact, they sort of combined to be primarily culpable on the first goal that the Timbers conceded in I think not a great moment collectively for the team. Phil Neville called it embarrassing watching that goal. I don't disagree. Really simple goal to give up in a phase in which you don't understand it. But those guys didn't, like, they didn't forget how to play soccer over the offseason, right? Jonathan Rodriguez looks worse today than he did when he showed up. He didn't forget how to play soccer in the last 6 weeks, however long it's been. Antony hasn't forgotten how to play soccer. Santiago Moreno doesn't forget how to play soccer every other week or every third week. He wasn't bad.
No, and in fact, Neville pointed out,
sort of singled him out as one guy who showed up.
It's like the only guy, actually. He was the only person that he named, which is interesting, given, just as a side note, given the issues that Santiago had with Gio last year and some of the outside questions, maybe not necessarily fair toward him about effort and everything. I think he was great, and I think that it's great for him that Neville singled him out. But yes, there are many others on the team. So.
And so, you know, I mean, this is why I think there are definitely things that you can say about this roster being like, it would be nice if they were deeper here. It would be great if they had another sort of playable fullback. It would be really helpful, I think, if they had one more sort of truly defensive-oriented midfielder. A central midfielder. Hey, I agree with those things, but those are, I mean, you can do that with basically every roster in MLS, right? You can go and say, this is where these guys are a little bit thin. I mean, you can do that across the board. The thing that I think when you start sort of making a long list of players where you're like, oh, this guy's been inconsistent. Oh, this guy's not been in good form. Oh, that guy's not been in good form. If you're talking about just those individual players, you are missing the forest for the trees. And the forest level view right now is that Phil Neville's not done a good job. Like, he and his coaching staff haven't done a good job of getting this team put together, instilling an identity, and getting it to play. Now, in fairness to them, and it's important to, you know, consider all of these things, they've been on the road a lot. The schedule has been difficult. They have a softer stretch coming up. And so, there are reasons not to, you know, completely throw them out the window at this point. But they're also on 0.9 points per game. That's even worse than 1.1 points per game. It's really, really bad. It's very bad. And the team's performance, by and large, has been very bad, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Absolutely criminal. Absolutely criminal. They are one of the worst defensive teams in the league. And Look, I mean, and there's been a debate that I think is a good debate. It's a healthy debate about whether it's a matter of back line issues or whether it's a matter of the Timbers not being super good and clean in possession. I think that that's a good conversation to have. I sort of fall in the why can't we have both? When you're shipping 2+ goals per game, there's a lot of room for a lot of things to go wrong. So there's plenty of defensive culpability to go around. But frankly, all of these things are about structure. Right. All of these things are about organization. The teams that are good in possession, it's not because they have a bunch of guys that kick the ball really well. I mean, like, everybody has to have a bunch of guys that kick the ball really well. It's soccer. That's an important part of it. But like, it's because they have really good structure. Like, you look at the Columbus Crew and these guys aren't like pulling off passes where you're like, whoa, nobody else in the league can do that. It's because their build out structure is phenomenal and they have just trained the living bejesus out of it. And they know where guys are going to be. They know where the passes are going to go. And that's why they can go down to Rayados and just play them off the field at BBVA Stadium. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But it's not because they have a level of soccer player that is orders of magnitude different than what the Timbers have.
Yeah, they don't have the 5 assist guy on their team.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Or like 11 of that guy. They're not 11 Leo Messi's running around. It's because their structure is so good that they can play, they can function that way. And that is the orders of magnitude difference between a team like Columbus playing at their best and the Timbers right now. It is structure. It's organization. So, you know, I think the forest level view is that this coaching staff has just not done a good job to this point of the season. And I think the pressure is going to start building if the results don't start turning, because the schedule reasons, excuses, whatever you want to call them, those are going to go away. It's going to get easier. Schedule is going to get more favorable. You got a couple sub 1.0 points per game teams coming to Providence Park in the next few games, both Seattle and San Jose. There are a couple of road games. I think they got to go to Minnesota. It's not all cream puff schedule. But there are some some games that should and need to be won. And if they don't, I mean, this is not a team that's done well at home to date. I mean, everybody's always like, all right, well, they're going to come home. I think they're, 1-2-1 at home? Or 1-1-2 at home? It's not great. Right? Like, that has not been a panacea so far. And so I think if they get through this next stretch and the results haven't taken a very significant turn for the better, I think the questions are going to start to be asked about whether this coaching staff is up to the job. And I think it would be hard to say that those questions aren't fair.
Yeah. And because honestly, like Phil, even, you know, not in the disingenuous, like, oh, it's on me sort of way, like after the game, he did take that sort of personal accountability, before obviously discussing all the ways in which the players were failing, but it didn't seem, at least from the outside to me, like something that's disingenuous. I think he knows that pressure exists, and I don't think that the relationship between him and the front office is so like buddy-buddy and hunky-dory in a way that like he just has this long leash and he can sort of do whatever he wants. He's a first-year coach, unproven in MLS, that, you know, they spent a lot of freaking money on the roster for. They
spent close to $20 million on this roster in the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's a BFD. And Rodriguez has been disappointing for sure over the last several games, especially. I think he showed flashes of serious quality when he first got here that have sort of dissipated on his front. Also, one thing that we aren't touching on that is, I think, essential to what has happened the last two games is Noah Vander. And Evander has been amazing. He's been like in the MLS MVP conversation, or should be, given some of the stretches of play that he's had.
Can you be in that conversation on 0.9 point per game team?
No, you can't. And also there's two guys on Miami that are like just blowing everybody else out of the water in that conversation. But that's a different discussion altogether. The main point obviously being that Evander is integral to this team's success. He's the engine that keeps them running. He's the straw that stirs the drink. He's all the superlatives that we like to use. And not having him has sucked, but they've been winless with him too in the stretch. In the stretches. I mean,
it's not like they were conceding any fewer goals with him on the field.
No, and that's the thing, is like there's a lot of attacking talent. There's a lot of playmaking guys that I think have shown flashes of serious quality this season, but the issues at the back are so prevalent and so consistently present that it just destroys everything. It's a waste. It's a waste of what you have achieved in being one of the better goal scoring teams in MLS. You are completely throwing that out the window by being disorganized at the back and by having guys that just have not been ready to play.
And this is an oversimplification, but I think there is a sort of core truth here in that I think it's easier to explain for a coach not having the talent if they're not scoring a lot of goals, right? I think there is a certain level of just playmaking talent that you need to regularly score a lot of goals. I don't think that holds true necessarily with a team's ability to be clean in possession, to not give the ball away in bad spots, and to not ship goals. I think a coach has more influence and more ability to take a, you know, even a flawed roster and make it competent in those ways than a coach does to have a team, you know, score tons of goals. And so that's why when I see the Timbers scoring a lot of goals, but failing really egregiously in these other phases of the game, why I do point a pretty big finger at the coaching staff and say, look, I mean, this is where you should be showing your greatest influence. This is where you have the greatest ability to mold the team. And that has been the team's greatest weakness so far. So, you know, I think Phil Neville has done some important things since coming to Portland. Frankly, in terms of re-engaging supporters, he has done more work in the last 5 months since he showed up than anybody at the Timbers did in the last 5 years. And that's important. Frankly, it would probably be a really good thing for the club, given that if he was succeeding on the field.
Yeah, he has shown a genuine desire not only to communicate with, but to understand the concerns of supporters in a way, not just like with the on-field stuff, which has obviously been the primary focus of him, but I think he has a genuine understanding of what the club means to the community and has repeatedly voiced that in ways that, you know, not every coach is going to do that. They'll say it maybe, but they might not necessarily mean it.
Yeah. And you know, I give him enormous credit for doing that work, especially sort of in the difficult context in which he came into Portland, where, you know, the pump was primed for his prior comments to reopen some old wounds. And they did reopen some old wounds. And I think he has actually done a lot of work to mend those wounds a little bit. So I give him a lot of credit for that. I just think what he's delivered on the field has not been good. And it's been as simple as that. You know, I mean, the other one that folks talk about that I chuckle about, I think this is not as salient a point as, you know, this is a little bit hot takey. But been talking about Juan Mosquera. Really, really has struggled on the defensive side. You know, if only we could go out and get like a Premier League quality retired fullback to come in and you know, teach him the finer points of defending in the position. There are two on the coaching staff. There are two people who meet that description on the coaching staff. But I mean, that's just it. I mean, you look at the overall trajectory of the team, and let's compare the trajectory, frankly, with a hire that I didn't like. Chris Armas in Colorado. Colorado had, I thought, an okay season, sort of on grading on the Colorado Rapids player acquisition curve. They had an okay offseason in terms of making some like good low cost kinds of moves. They're never going to spend money. They're never going to get that talent that you need to really be sort of a game breaking team. But I thought they made some, you know, shrewdish moves. They had a solid offseason. They came in and looked really bad against the Timbers early on. It was clear that they had a lot of work to do. They've done a lot of work. They're a much better team today than they were when we saw them 2.5 months ago in Providence Park. You absolutely can't say the same for the Timbers. I would take the Timbers roster over the Rapids roster every day of the week and twice on Sunday. It is a more talented roster, especially in the attack. I mean, my goodness, Colorado's still starting Kevin Cabral, for goodness sake. And Armas is making it work. The Timbers have a ton more talent, and they've gone in exactly the opposite direction in the last 2.5 months. And that's the difference that coaching can make.
Yeah, and this upcoming stretch is really the step up to the plate situation for the Timbers, right? The excuse, and it has not been used as an excuse by the coaching staff at all. In fact, I think that in Phil's post game, he sort of poo-pooed that sort of notion, yeah, that you know, it was a rough stretch for them in terms of the schedule. But this is it now, right? Like, this is like you have way more home games. I think 7 out of the next 9 at home. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, or
this is quality content. 4 hearing out, you count, yeah, audibly.
4 of the next 6. Excuse me, listeners, at home, and against teams that are not necessarily of the quality that you went on the road and played and unfortunately dropped points against. But hey, it's still MLS. There's still this massive level of parity, and you still have that opportunity to crawl out of the pit that you have dug yourself into just by the fact that there is so much incompetence around you in the Western Conference. So this is the stretch, yes, to do that, period. Like, this has to be the stretch of games where they're like, okay, we're starting to, at the very least, right the ship. They don't have to do what the Thorns did. They don't have to win 4 in a row and become world beaters.
Would be nice, though.
It'd be pretty sweet. It would
like helpful.
Take a lot of pressure, off of a lot of different individuals on the staff and in the roster. But they don't have to do that to showcase that things are going in the right direction. And it starts against Seattle on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's right. I also think they need to put together a string of results. And otherwise, you know, I mean, you're looking at the top 4 now. The Timbers are, depending on how you count, between 8 and 10 points off the top 4 in the conference. That's a really big deficit. I mean, we're a third of the way into the season. It's not like this is super early days anymore. We're sort of at the you are your record stage of the season now. And that's a really big deficit. If the Timbers want to get into that top 4, they're going to have to really pull a rabbit out of a hat now, to the point where I think you'd probably say that's not a super realistic goal. And there's a lot of data to suggest that if you're not in the top 4, what the heck are you playing for? Because that's where champions come from, right? That's where teams that win trophies come from, is that top 4. And so, you know, that's not to say the Timbers can't make the playoffs. MLS has a famously very, 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 very generous rubric for making the playoffs. It can still get there. But, you know, if you're in the playoffs in one of those lower seeds, history says you're meat. And that at this moment, with how poor the Timbers have been and the quality of the results to date, seems like the Timbers' greatest aspiration, which isn't a good one. And Soccer Made in Portland parlance, it ain't shoot.
That game for the Timbers, 1:45 p.m. Pacific on Sunday. here in Portland at Providence Park, AAPI Heritage Day. So that'll be a fun one out at PP. And we've got the Thorns the day before taking on Seattle Reign, no longer OL Reign. Darn it. It's Portland versus Seattle at long last once again at Providence Park. That's on Saturday at 7. I will be there. I got tickets. So I will be packing in there with a whole bunch of other folks. Perfect. We'll have to link up and have a beer, my friend.
Sounds good.
So we will
had some beers at Wrigley Field this last weekend. That was a great time.
That sounds fun. I would love to get out there for a game. I
had a trip to Chicago. Oh, absolutely must do.
Yeah.
Must do. I mean, I'm a Cubs fan, so I do it with a little bit of regularity. Although I hadn't been in a few years, so it was really nice to go back. Just awesome. Sat in the bleachers one day, which is like a must have, you know, slightly degenerate like sporting experience, but like a great time.
It's like being in the 300s of Moda Center would
yeah,
be.
It, but much, much better.
Okay.
So yeah, had sort of one Ferris Bueller day and then good seats for another day. That was great. So, you know, if a beer with you at the Thorns game is anything like that, it'll be, you know, 12 out of 10.
Cheers. We'll see you there, everybody, on Saturday as the Thorns take on Seattle Reign, and then we'll be back next week to chat everything that goes on in these derby matches over the weekend. For Chris Reifer, I'm Ryan Clark. Thanks for joining us. Like, subscribe, follow on Twitter, do all the things. We'll catch you next week.